The following podcast is a Super Network production with your hosts, Super Marcy.
Yeah, definitely a step up, but, you know, that could be perhaps maybe this script just worked. Maybe it was just the fact that it had Eric Roberts being all Eric Robertsy.
The terrible Australian, B. Jemine.
Why doesn't the vampire just leave? It's not like that he's being held there against his will. And we've seen him a few times on top of built-on roofs. Like, why does he just piss off and leave?
It contains coarse and explicit language.
The housemate dude, I was like, why the f*** are you dressed like Constantine? That was just weirding out the whole time.
Mature themes.
You know, it's your wedding day and everyone always has cold feet and they sort of... This is kind of more the extreme version of that kind of scenario. Like, should I marry a serial killer or not?
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
For more, please visit supermarcy.com and show your support at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy the show.
G'day everyone, this is B. Jemine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome to episode 17 of Podcasters of Horror, the podcast where we dive into film and TV horror anthologies. And for this episode, we'll be taking a look at two episodes from the short-lived Mick Garris-created horror anthology series, Fear Itself. And with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy, how are you?
Hello, hello. Very happy to be back here to discuss more episodes of Fear Itself. It has been a little while, but we are back and we are going to dive right back into this show with the next two episodes.
Indeed, we're at episode 7 and 8. So we're getting very close to the tail end of this journey of Fear Itself. And it's been quite an eventful one because we've had a bit... The episodes themselves have been up and down, but we have after these two episodes, we have about at least 5 more to do. So it's been quite the journey, especially kind of going through the ones that Mick Garris himself has created from Masters of Horror right here to Fear Itself. And then, of course, we'll in a couple episodes' time, we'll dive into, I guess, the movie version of, say, of a Masters of Horror or Fear Itself type of anthology, which would be Nightmare Cinema. And so we definitely have a lot to discuss with this episode. And I believe we'll just get straight to it. For this one, we'll be talking about episodes 7 and 8, which of course are the ones Community and Skin and Bones. And first up is episode 7, which is the episode Community.
Tracy? I just ran into Ron and Sandra.
Heather and Candace came by. Oh, we like to check in on our neighbors after they've been here a while to see how they're adjusting.
Oh, and we're doing great, aren't we?
Yeah, great.
It's obvious. Your house is wonderful.
I'm proud of ownership.
Absolutely.
Look, I don't mean to be rude, but if you want something from me, you want me to volunteer for another committee...
They're concerned about us.
Because?
Because we haven't gotten pregnant yet. There's no need to panic. It happens to lots of couples. We just want you to know that we can help.
Oh, we don't want your help. Our private life is none of your business.
We really are fine. I know. I just want you to explore every possibility. We have fertility specialists. We have donors.
Okay, you need to leave now.
We truly want to help. Now, I suggest you take a look at the residence agreement that you both signed. We have every right to be concerned.
Your house is lovely.
Which was directed by Mary Harron. And for those out there who don't know who she was the director behind films such as American Psycho, Charlie Says, and The Moth Diaries. The episode was written by Kelly Kennemere, and the episode stars Brandon Routh, Sherry Appleby, and many more. And the plot summary for this one, which I am reading off the film, off the series' Wikipedia page, is... A young couple move into a gated community and discover that the community hides a dark secret.
Mm.
Now, Marcy, I know this is your first time seeing the episode Community. Yep. And what makes this episode especially interesting is that this is the first episode between both Masters of Horror and this series that was directed by a female director. So Now, given with the premise that I just read out, what did you think of the episode Community overall?
Yeah, so this is kind of like a Stepford Wives kind of tale where there's this gated community called the Commons, and they run things very specifically in this place. And if you don't, I guess, do what they want you to do, they will find a way to make you that way. So in itself, yeah, kind of intriguing premise, decent enough cast with Brandon Routh and Shree Appleby. So no complaints on that. And yeah, finally, like a female director for an episode, which was, you know, interesting. And I think this like kind of story and the way this was structured would have actually have worked better. And especially if it could have gone into some more darker places, it would have worked much better as a Masters of Horror episode and been given another around 15 minutes to really flesh it out, because it is kind of clunky because of the running time and it doesn't have quite enough time to tell this story. It's like, okay, we get the opening hook, okay, and then it goes back several months with this young couple, da-da-da-da. But then it kind of just like skips forward and it'll tell you, oh, this is like a day later or a month later. Other points, it doesn't tell you how much later it is, but it's apparent it is some kind of time later. And it jumps around a bit and we don't get as much insight into what the hell this town is doing. We kind of are just exposed to it. And you would have thought the reactions of the characters would have been a lot more like, what the hell? But it doesn't quite reach there. So I think this one actually had a lot of potential and it could have worked as more of a Masters of Horror episode, whereas what we've got feels kind of watered down and a little bit clunky in something that otherwise probably could have worked a lot better. What did you think of this one?
Yeah, well, this is my second time watching the episode Community. So I was very curious to see how I would feel about it on the second watch, because I think I was kind of pretty mixed on it the first time around, even though it has a lot of qualities about it that definitely intrigued me. Like, it had this sort of Stepford Wives type of premise, had Mary Harring as the director of it, and of course having Shree Appleby and Brandon Routh, who I built, and this is like one of the first projects he did post Superman Returns. So I was very intrigued to see like all these talented people, like what they would do with Community. But having now rewatched it again, I definitely have to say this is without a doubt one of my least favorite episodes of the series, because a lot of what you said pretty much exactly kind of summed up my feelings on the episode. Like, even as good as a premise that is does it as it has, it is very clunky in terms of how it approaches it. And a lot of times when it sort of, you know, it kind of sort of approaches sort of the thematic elements of the story in a very sort of clunky, half-baked way, where it sort of comes across as more eye-rolling and obvious rather than sort of interesting or compelling. And of course, with the constant time jumps, like skipping over a few weeks or a few months, it just feels very uneven as a structure, and you just never really kind of settle into both the story or the characters, because the episode just keeps jumping forward in time, and it never really sort of gives us as an audience kind of a few minutes to kind of really kind of settle into the characters and story. Like, just as we're about to, then it like skips ahead and then we get to a separate scene where so much has happened in between the time jumps that you're kind of confused about like what is going on. Like, and it just sort of gets really muddled and kind of confusing. And yeah, and there's also a lot of inconsistencies with the story and characters. Like, the way that our two main characters, Brandon Routh and Shree Appleby, who I think are both pretty solid in the episode, like, they're sort of in this community, and at first they're kind of a bit bewildered by the hospitality of the town and how everyone sort of interacts around them. But, you know, they sort of get used to it, and they think, oh, this is a really nice place. But as soon as they kind of get further and further within this town and know like the sort of the dark side of it. Like all these kind of things that are happening in this town, like any normal person would see these things and then be like, you know what? I think we need to get the fuck out of here. They don't do that. Particularly if there's a scene where one of their neighbors, like the husband catches the wife having an affair with someone. And then the community decides to punish her by tying her up in the town square and having everyone throw like fruit and vegetables at her. And Brandon Ralph is like, oh, what on earth is going on? Why are you doing this? And of course the wife is like, you know, this is my punishment and I deserve this and stuff like that. Like there's definitely a lot of interesting things to say about, you know, at least in terms of a thematic front with what this this episode is trying to say with its story. But like you say, it sort of approaches it in a very sort of heavy-handed and clunky way that it just doesn't really kind of land much of an impact as it should have had. And of course, as the story progresses and our two main leads kind of see more and more of this stuff happening, like they just kind of, you know, like any normal person would have just gone out of there right away, but they continue on. But I know the episode does explain that, like, if they do leave the community and stuff like that, they lose, like, not only the house, but also the money that they put into the house and everything. So I guess on that front, it does make sense. But I don't know, it's still, I just couldn't believe, like, these two characters would have just stuck around for this long while all this stuff was happening.
Yeah, it's a bit silly when you think about it. It's like, you know, they're threatening them with like, oh, well, if you break your contract, oh, you'll just be left paying this back for a few years and, oh, your credit rating will be crap. And I'm like, yeah, but that's freaking everybody.
Mm.
Like, really, that's your threat? Okay, then. And then it's like, I guess the character of Tracy, who played by Shreya Appleby, is like more accepting of it all, whereas Brandon Ralph's character is like, something's weird here. But you would think like alarm bells would have sounded, or they would have actually read the contracts before signing it. And I think, you know, could that have kind of been the moral they were trying to go with? But it's really hard to tell. And especially with, you know, like, they're not that shocked that they can watch other people's bedrooms on their TV or watch themselves. Like, he's just sitting there like, oh, okay. And then he's, like, at a meeting about punishing this woman. And it's like, wait, this just goes from one thing to the other. And he's just reacting a bit like, yeah. And it just doesn't quite get there. And it's almost like they didn't have enough time to be able to properly flesh this out.
Yeah.
Have things make a little bit more sense, which is why I said earlier, like, it would make a better, like, Masters of Horror episode because it would have had less constraints.
Yeah, exactly. It does feel like a longer episode of a TV show or even a film that's just, like, a 90-minute film just cut down to 40 minutes. And also, like you say, I mean, any normal person, like, they're just watching TV one night and they stumble across, like, surveillance footage of other people's houses and what's going on in their own lives. Like, you would, like, any normal person be like, what the hell is this? This is an absolute invasion of privacy. But yet, after a while, they kind of just get so accepting of it. And I guess for me, because, you know, the episode kind of goes out of this way that not only is this kind of, this little community kind of very strict on how it sort of approaches, you know, its citizens and how family is important and all that. And they do sort of suggest, like, this community not only helps those who live there, but also those who can move on. Like, they can help people get into universities or into government and stuff like that. They kind of show that this community kind of reaches beyond this little town. But
it's kind of insinuating it's like the elite kind of
thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But at the same time, though, you just can't really buy this town because they don't seem like that much of a threat, at least to me. At least in something like in the Stepford Wives, like the original 70s film, you get that sense of threat on like what is happening to the wives in this town. But here, like the actual community, it's like really? You're terrified of these people? I'm like, just slap them and then get it over and done with.
I know, they don't really feel all that threatening. And it's just like, you know, you can pretty much stand up and get out. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was, look, I think this had a lot of opportunity or a lot, not opportunity, the right word I'm looking for is, it showed a lot of promise, but it didn't quite live up to what it could have been. But, you know, and it doesn't help that, it feels like it could have been like an 80-minute film that was chopped in half. It does really feel like you're missing bits and pieces and you could have fleshed out things more with, you know, sort of maybe not focusing on certain things that didn't really matter. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, it was kind of an interesting episode, but it was more of a case of what if this could have been on Masters of Horror?
And also, like, when we get sort of to the ending, like, which, of course, like, Brandon Routh and Sherry Appleby, they sort of arrange to escape. So, basically, they bring in one of their friends to pretend to be Sherry, like, in disguise, while she sort of has gone out to hide out at her parents' lodge and all that. And then, like, you know, of course, Brandon Routh's character and their friend get caught out, so he makes an escape, and then he runs into Sherry, but then we kind of, and then it sort of like ends on a twist where you find out that Sherry's pretty much now a fully indoctrinated into this community, and also because they have two friends who are a couple as well, and then their male friend, who's also a lawyer, who's the one who's like, you know, you need to get out of there and all that. He's very insistent. And then he's with her. And even he's like, oh, you know, you should stay in this community too. And like,
we'll be
this
neighbors.
Is a perfect place. We'll be neighbors. And it's like, where did this happen?
We miss his brainwashing somewhere?
Yeah, exactly. And it's not like this community has any kind of like machinery or something like that kind of brainwashes them, like at least in something like The Stepford Wives, and you know, spoilers for a film that came out in the 70s, like they changed the wives into robots. So that made sense. Here they just kind of get brainwashed of their own accord, but it's not like, you know, subliminally or like, or using a device that makes them brainwash. Yeah. It just doesn't make sense as the characters changing that much to kind of to be indoctrinated into this community.
Yeah, it's pretty much like maybe they could have drugged them, but drugging them, like, does that mean they changed instantly? It doesn't really make too much sense in the end in that regard.
Yeah, like you said, it's basically like a feature-length movie, cut down the 40 minutes, and kind of all the important information that we as an audience needed to kind of fill in the gaps of what's going on in the story seems like it was completely cut out. And to me, it kind of just feels like the people involved with this episode, like, just felt, oh, we're going to do like a Stepford Wives type of tale, but they just kind of took a very sort of half-baked approach to the story. And also, even Mary Harron, I think, who's a very talented filmmaker and who's made a lot of really strong films. I mean, American Psycho is a fantastic film, but it just seemed like she was on autopilot through this episode. Like, there's just no real kind of tension or style or anything like that. I will say this now. One of the only things about this episode that really did get me, because earlier in the episode, Brandon Routh and Sherry Appleby's characters, they kind of befriend an older couple who live next door. And then, of course, there's scenes where the husband, like, gets really drunk at their party and all that, and he topples over. And you notice, like, oh, he's got, you know, he's lost one of his legs. So he's got, like, a prosthetic leg. But what I really liked about that scene is, like, you don't think much of it at the time, but it foreshadows what happens to Brandon Routh's character, and it insinuates, like, anytime somebody wants to try to get away from this community, what do? They cut off their legs.
Yeah, they take your leg or your legs, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, that on its own is a very creepy idea, and it does send, at least, I will admit, the episode, like, ends the episode on quite a haunting note, because you see Brandon Routh just watching his wife and their son, like, from their window. Like, you know, she's all happy. She's pretty much now a part of this community. And he feels completely trapped and has to put on this facade, like, this is a happy community, even though he cannot escape because, you know, he's lost his legs. Which, you know, again, it's symbolic of, you know, being trapped in this place. But, yeah, and, like, that aspect, I think, was really well done and quite well handled. But it's just unfortunate that, to me at least, out of the overall episode, that's, like, one of the few kind of really interesting things about the whole episode.
Yeah, at least, like, you're looking at that, and, I mean, as I was watching it, I see this couple show up at the door, and I'm like, oh, well, the new couple will probably end up being the new version of this old couple, which is essentially what happens. But at least that was something more interesting, like, it gave you the hint that with the leg and that obviously something's wrong. But yeah, I think it was pretty much a missed opportunity with this one.
Actually, now that I sort of think about it, I completely forgot. I guess in some way the community, at least how it tries to be threatening, is that not only can they do cut off your legs if you try to escape, but if you try to kind of leave, they insinuate that they will hurt a family member of yours who lives outside of the community. Which, again, it does feel like when you kind of realize all this stuff, it's like, I mean, you got this community who seems to be happy and everything, but it does make you think, like, are they truly happy, or do they also feel very trapped in this community? Because I feel like it's a kind of a mixture. Like, some are definitely happy to be there, like Sherry's Appleby's character does by the end of the episode. And then, of course, you got the other half who I think are just completely trapped and they can never leave this community, which I think, again, it does send the episode on an interesting and haunting note, but I kind of feel like the episode never really dives into that as much as it could have been.
Yeah, there could have been a lot more to explore, but I just don't think they had quite enough time for that. But
yeah, exactly.
I do still feel that they're not all that threatening, because they're just like kind of standing there and you're just like, really?
Yeah, exactly. They don't seem as threatening because, you know, these are just normal, everyday people. It's not like there's there's a security guard, but even then, like, it's only just the one security guard. So, and also, like, everyone else just seems pretty normal and could easily kind of be taken down if push comes to shove.
It's almost like they secretly don't want to.
And I guess in a way they kind of use manipulation to kind of get what they want. But like I said, the episode never, or at least the script anyway, never really kind of dives into that. Because that could have been interesting if they explored that more.
Yeah, so I think it was a missed opportunity. And I've said that like 5 times already.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess we can wrap up this talk on the episode Community. Marcy, what rating do you give this episode?
I gave this episode 2.5 baby-faced Brandon Rouths out of 5. I thought it was kind of, middle-of-the-road type of effort. There was definitely potential for something more, but it didn't quite achieve it. But, yeah, I think it is slightly better than some other ones we've seen, but not as good as others, basically.
Definitely. If I had to give this one a rating, I'd probably give it to Brandon Routh who strangely has Tom Cruise style hair in this episode out of 5. like I said, there's definitely a lot of potential with this premise. And both Brandon Routh and Sherry Appleby do give pretty solid turns in this episode. But unfortunately, due to the kind of very mediocre script, kind of middle of the road direction, and also the untapped potential of the premise, it just ends up being kind of a very forgettable episode overall. But we'll move right along to episode 8 of Fear Itself, which of course is Skin and Bones.
I guess I'll tell the kids that you're feeling better. They'll be so happy.
kids.
Why don't you just lie down, honey? Maybe we should call Dr. Morgan.
Oh, I don't need a doctor. I feel fine.
Baby, please, go back to bed.
Let her go.
Or what?
Don't make me answer that question. You all right?
What's happening to him?
Please. Go back to bed, brother.
Which was directed by Larry Fessenden, who, of course, is the director behind films such as Habit, Wendigo, and The Last Winter. And this episode was written by Drew McWeeny and Rebecca Swan, who previously wrote the Masters of Horror episodes Cigarette Burns and Pro-Life. And this episode stars Doug Jones, John Piper Ferguson, Holly Hagen, and Gordon Tootosen. I probably butchered his last name, so please forgive me. And the plot summary for this episode is, a missing rancher returns to his family, but they realize that he is no longer the man they knew. Now, Marcy, tell us your thoughts on Skin and Bones.
Yeah, so again, another one I haven't seen because Fear Itself is a show that I did not actually watch before. And I was not really sure what to think of this one. It just kind of started off and I'm like, what's going on? But then once Doug Jones shows up, which is pretty quickly, it becomes a lot more interesting and a lot more intense. This is definitely one of the more brutal episodes that we've seen so far of Fear Itself. This kind of had the brutality and creep factor that we probably expected more from, Masters of Horror. And we kind of got that here, but I think it's really powered by the very creepy performance of Doug Jones, whereas I think it's pretty much all about him and what he can do. And the character he plays has, like, been possessed by a Wendigo, and he needs to feed off human flesh. But the way we see him, he's, like, very, very thin, essentially looking like you'd say to someone, skin and bones, or that old saying. I don't think anyone really uses that anymore. And he's basically out to kill and feed, and he's, targeted the family, and there's this weird, bizarre subplot involving the guy's brother and his wife and kids and stuff, and I was just a bit like, is this really necessary in this? I think you could have told it without the added drama, but I digress. And by the end, it kind of reaches this really mass, not insane, but it's a very full-on kind of third act that I think actually works pretty well. This might be one of the better episodes we've seen for Fear Itself, and I think an interesting script and I think acting job by Doug Jones really elevated it.
I agree. Like, I remember when this episode aired, and what's interesting about Skin and Bones as an episode is that this was actually, at least in the US anyway, this was the final episode that aired before the show was cancelled, because this was aired before the Summer Olympics. And originally NBC were going to, like, bring the show back after the Olympics had finished, but of course they quietly kind of discantled the series after that because of the low ratings that the show was getting at the time, and the remaining five episodes wouldn't even reach, like, American TV screens until the series was released on DVD the following year. Although the episodes did air in other parts of the world as planned, but so this episode, at least I guess with the original airing of this episode, I think this was a pretty solid end to at least the original airing of the series, because even when I saw the episode when it first came out until now, I do agree. This is a pretty solid episode. And I think now, having rewatched it again, I did forget on how at least brutal and creepy this episode actually is. And this is one I think could easily have been expanded a little bit to be an episode of Masters of Horror. And I would have been surprised, like, maybe it was at least in the during development that it was originally going to be a Masters of Horror episode. But when they decided not to go with the third season and instead to retool and Mick Garris created, you know, Fear itself instead, they probably had to retool the script so it can fit or, you know, you know, a normal television time slot. So, but they still were able to get away with quite a lot. Like, even though there's not really much in terms of gore or violence on screen, but what they do show does quite leave an impact.
Yeah.
And it does have a good bit of atmosphere. And I think Larry Fessenden, who I've seen quite a lot of his films, and I think he did a really good job with the story. Although I had to kind of laugh because I don't know what it is with Larry Fessenden, but I think he has a massive fascination with the Wendigo because it's like one of many projects he has been involved with that involved the Wendigo. Because of course he made a film called Wendigo. And the Wendigo played a small part in the film The Last Winter. And of course he co-wrote and also contributed a voice and also acting performance in the video game Until Dawn, which of course centered around Wendigos, which I have played, and it's actually a pretty good game. So I think, I guess if you need to call somebody to make a project on Wendigo, Larry Fessenden is the person you go after.
Apparently, yes.
Yeah. Although I think originally, at least early in production from what I remember, I could be completely wrong, so forgive me if I am, but I think they originally wanted John Carpenter to direct this episode as well, but he ended up turning it down, so they went with Larry Fessenden, who I think, even though I would have loved to have seen what John Carpenter could have done with this story, but I think Larry Fessenden, like I said, did such a good job with it. And it's also quite well written as well. Like, some of the dialogue can be a little hokey, but I think the atmosphere and the creepy vibe that the episode brings kind of overcome that. And also the performances are solid. Like you say, Doug Jones is fantastic in this episode. He is legit creepy, and when he kind of switches back and forth being, you know, the Grady, the husband, and of course the kind of possessed version of him, like, it's, he does a good job at switching those two kind of personalities that it, like, on a dime, that it's just so effective. And of course, like, you know, John Piper Ferguson and Holly Hagen and the rest of the cast are also quite solid in their roles. And I also completely forgot, and again, even though this is a spoiler podcast, that you think, like, Rowdy, Grady's brother, is going to make it all the way. But no, he dies at the end of the second act. And then that's when his wife, Elena, played by Molly Hagen, kind of takes over as the central protagonist of the story.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you think, like, this guy will last till the end. But no, he doesn't. And then the Doug Jones Wendigo creature is like, oh, you got to chop him up because I want some of me brother for soup. And it's like, ew, this is a bit gross. And yeah, it actually, like, the way that they managed to kind of set up this really good atmosphere but also not show you that much in terms of needing to show gore and stuff. Like, it's done really well that you don't need to see anything. It is the sound effects and stuff that kind of, like, ugh, make you squirm, which I think, you know, that's actually a really good thing. And yeah, I think this was probably one of the better episodes we've seen, or they did for Fear Itself. And yeah, it's weird to think about that this was the last one that aired and then they just quietly cancelled it over there. It was bizarre. With like five episodes left, you know, they could have screened them, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess, I mean, it's not the first time that a TV show that has a certain number of episodes was cancelled that they didn't show the rest of them. But I think, it would have been nice if they did, like, at least in the US anyway, kind of just show the last five episodes. I mean, they only had to wait 2 weeks and then just show the rest of them, or even put them at a different time slot. as well. But I guess, you know, the ratings spoke for themselves, and also the reviews for the show overall weren't the greatest. So, but yeah, I was kind of disappointed that they never did show those last five episodes. I mean, I didn't see the last five episodes of this series until later on. But I do agree with you. Skin and Bones is definitely one of the stronger episodes overall from Fear itself, and one that could have easily been as good if it was a Masters of Horror episode. Yeah. They could have, you know, expanded a little bit more. But I would even say it could have even worked as a feature, like as well. But I do like that, at least with the episode, it kind of starts off with basically the family trying to figure out what happened to Grady. And then, of course, he rocks back up. Although I will say, like, once they saw Grady is killed at the end, it kind of ends on a very climactic note, because you kind of wish that it, like, there was more to that ending, but it kind of just ends after that.
Yeah, it kind of does just end. And I was kind of expecting there to be like a weird twist, but there wasn't. So it was kind of a little almost anticlimactic in a way, but still kind of fitting, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it kind of works, but yeah, you kind of at the end of it kind of wish, like, oh, if there was a little bit more they could have done with it. But that being said, though, I think it is a pretty solid episode overall. It's got some pretty solid turns. Doug Jones is definitely, without a doubt, the highlight of the episode, but he's always great no matter what.
Yeah.
It has a pretty decent script, and also has a lot of good chills. Sort of the darker aspects of the story do land a punch, even if they, you know, had to kind of tone it back down a bit to be on, on regular television. But no, I think overall it's a pretty solid episode, and definitely one of the stronger episodes overall of the show.
I would tend to agree with that.
Indeed. And Marcy, what are your final thoughts and rating for this episode?
Yeah, so I give this one 3.5 awesome Doug Jones performances out of 5. I think he really does make this one just that good. I think his performance, like, in all the different ways he does perform, like, even under the makeup and whatnot, like, he really does a good job, and he's very frightening, and it's, that sort of possessed sort of thing it's kind of hard to look at. So I think he's definitely the highlight. He really helps make this work. But I think it was also a solid script, decently directed as well. And it shows definitely potential that you could have expanded this more as well. So, yeah, one of the better ones we've seen so far, in my opinion. What about your rating and final last thoughts on this?
Yeah, I give it a solid 3.5 as well. Like, it's not perfect, but I think, due to the time constraints and kind of, like, having to do this in 40 minutes rather than an hour, and, you know, it couldn't be as dark or as violent as it could have been, but I still think that Larry Fessenden and the writers kind of still managed to make something that is quite solid and quite dark and creepy, nonetheless, with the episode. And it definitely, without a doubt, is one of the highlights of the one only season of Fear Itself. And, you know, you can't go wrong with having a project that's centered around a Wendigo. And, of course, you know, Larry Fessenden is going to, like, deliver on that front. Because, like I say, the man is obsessed with Wendigos.
He is the foremost expert on Wendigos. Don't quote me on that. That might be completely wrong. But we're just assuming anyway. So
exactly. Although I have a feeling if he ever listens to this episode, he'd probably be like, you know what? Maybe I am.
Maybe he is. To be determined or something.
Exactly.
I don't know.
But yes. Although if Larry Fessenden, if you're listening to this episode, you're more than welcome to come on the show and talk about this episode with us. But anyways. I guess that'll be a wrap on this episode of Podcasters of Horror. We hope all of our listeners enjoyed listening to us talk about these two episodes. And once again, thank you, Marcy, for being an always awesome co-host.
Yes, absolutely. And I do believe if people want to find Fear Itself, It is on some streaming platforms around the globe. Maybe if you have a VPN, check out the US just normal Plex stuff. It could be there.
Indeed, indeed. And I'll be curious to hear what all of our listeners think of these episodes once they're able to watch them. Like I said, it should be too hard to find them on your neck of the woods, depending where you are. But if you need a little bit of help, stick around to the end of this episode because we have a sponsor who may be able to help you out in that regard. But
indeed.
Yes. And Marcy, where can people find you on the internet this week?
As usual, we can be found at supermarcy.com, the base of operations for us here at the Super Network. You can find the Super Network on all your main social media platforms. You can check us out on Facebook under the Super Network, or you can look up the Super Network group on Facebook as well and join in the shenanigans there. You can find us on Twitter at @SM_SuperNetwork. We are on the Instagram, the.super.network, and the TikToks at the Super Network, and of course the YouTube. Just look up the Super Network. And you can also find me personally at Super Marcy on Twitter and Super_Marcy on Letterboxd, and look for the Super Network and all the podcasts such as Podcasters of Horror on all your major podcast streaming platforms. Just look up the podcast and beat.
If people want to find me personally, they can find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/BeJamine or my Letterboxd page at letterboxd.com/BeJamine. And of course, you can find all my writings over at supermarcy.com with all my reviews and columns.
Indeed, indeed. And that's it from us for now. Tune in next time for the next two episodes of Fear Itself. And we'll be almost finished the show.
Indeed. And for that one, we're going to be talking about the episodes Something with Bite and Chance. So stay tuned next month for our thoughts on those two episodes.
Indeed. Catch you later, everybody.
See you, everybody. Bye.
Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN. Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised. A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi. So just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show. Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal. You can also find the link in the show notes. Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. And now back to the show.